Yeah, it's Pulse with the sports. You don't need another report. Bleeding green, tell our D.I.E. Hold it down for the best team. We in first place, we the Celtics. Try to shoot it, we ain't let ya. Finna go and win a ring. Giving fades like I'm Kyrie. You the opposition, can't score yet. Homie, you ain't even on the floor yet. Big buckets and big shots. Better check the time on the shot clock. Got my shooters on me, they wet you up. It's a 30-footer, I ain't letting up. Scary Terry with the dancing bear. Gonna light it up like it ain't fair. Dunk it on you like Rozier. Fourth quarter, we in fifth gear. I got Tatum, I got Brown. I got Marcus locking you down. Grab a broom, it's a sweep. Score 100 on our feet. Celtics Pulse, we the team. And we don't accept defeat, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Celtics Pulse Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. You can find our app on iTunes as well as our podcast. We've got a multitude of topics and teams ranging everything from NFL to NBA, and we're further expanding. We'll also have pop culture on there as well. Today's pod, we've got myself, Tim, Return of the Boy on Twitter, as well as Adam Taylor and Brendan Nunez.
What up, what up?
Hey, guys.
And today, obviously, is a big day. We've got the Super Bowl going on. As a little homer here, go Pats. We'll brush up on that towards the end, but right now we are going to be recapping the Celtics-Oklahoma City game. Heck of a game, guys. What are your immediate thoughts since it's, you know, fresh off the printer, I guess?
Yeah, well, we shot our best field goal percentage on the entire year, and putting up 134 to 129 for two of the top three defenses was just insane. The shooting was ridiculous on both sides, and it felt like we were in control the whole time, but OKC just hung around.
Yeah, I mean, OKC... sorry, Tim, go.
No, go, go. No, run with it.
OKC pulled back in the... Was it the beginning of the third? And then we kind of just pulled away again. I think that Westbrook had a bit of an off. I know he got a triple-double, but he still looked a bit off. George got locked down by Brown a few times during that game. It was a great game, though.
Yeah, Hayward had a nice steal, too, at one point. He's starting to look more and more explosive. I definitely have to say, obviously, Marcus Smart had a really, really great game.
Oh, yeah.
Kyrie was also unbelievable. Ended up dropping, 30 points, 4 assists?
30-11-4.
Yeah, 30-11-4. So he had a great game. Obviously, something that you expect when you he rested clearly. I think for those few games, you know, you're going against a couple clunker teams. You had him come back for the Knicks, and that's something we could talk about too. I know it was covered in the last podcast, but it was definitely cool to see them go against a team like OKC. They are sneaky good. Obviously, when we're talking about Paul George, he's clearly having that MVP kind of season. And he's getting to that point where I think he's better than what he was before pre-injury. And that kind of gives you a little bit of hope with Hayward and him kind of slowly working his way back into that rotation and getting back that explosiveness.
And touching on Kyrie, did you see that stat to say that he had the most 25-point 10-plus assist games since John Havlicek?
Really?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think he broke it during this game. But he's got the most in the season now since 1970-71, John Havlicek.
And speaking on John Havlicek, I'm pretty sure this game, Smart just passed him on the Celtics list. I think now Smart's 14th on the list for most steals all time for a Celtic.
Oh, man, I'd love to see him keep climbing. How high is Rondo on that? Do you know?
Ooh, I have no idea. I would imagine Rondo is probably top 10. Yeah. I mean, right now, Smart already passed Tony Allen for threes, right? He did that this year.
Yeah, I don't think of three-point shooter Tony Allen.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the time when you talk about Tony Allen and what kind of player on the Celtic reminds you of him the most now, it's got to be Marcus Smart, you know, yeah. That gritty 3-and-D defender, guy who just puts his body on the line. And I don't know what it is whenever he goes against Oklahoma City. I don't know if it's because of playing, you know, his days in Oklahoma for college. But, man, does he ball out when we go against the Thunder. He always balls out, especially when we're in Oklahoma. But, man, he played great today. It was funny reading online where it's just, you know, Smart's adding a completely different dimension to this team now that you're finally able to have him trusted as a shooter. He had a couple amazing threes, obviously, you know, just hustle plays, grip plays. But man, he's putting on a career year, and it's after he signed the big contract. You know, he's doing the exact opposite, and I feel like that's just a summation of what kind of player Marcus Smart is.
Just going roundabout back to the Rondo. Rondo's third in all-time steals with 990.
Man.
Third.
Yeah, that's third is second, Pierce is first.
Oh, huh. Well, that's also not surprising either because, you know, he played longer than Rondo, but, I mean, he was around here long enough that it doesn't surprise me he had that many. Yeah. But, I mean, Pierce, when he was back in his day. Yeah.
1,583 steals.
It's a stupid amount of steals.
What's Marcus' number right now?
I think if Smart plays his entire career in Boston, then Smart finishes number one in steals.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Dude is called Cobra for a reason. Yeah. How many is he at? Brandon was asking. Do we know?
What, Smart?
Yeah, he's 14th, right?
Yeah, let me pull that up. It's probably not been updated. The game's just happened. Let me see.
And there's a couple guys with steals every night. Like Marcus had two, Al had two, Jason had two. Usually see Kyrie get some. He didn't have any tonight.
He had the poke away at the end. And that's another thing, getting back to Westbrook having another, you know, decent game. With the triple doubles, man, I'm kind of over it. I mean, I know a lot of people are, but he had a huge screw up towards the end of that game. And luckily they still hung around. Yeah, that was a huge turnover.
Yeah.
And he got lucky with that foul call on Kyrie with like 5.2 left. I didn't think there was really enough contact to call, and it was more so Westbrook falling down and what it looked like contact. We only got one angle, and you really couldn't see any of it. But, you know, I forget what the free throw differential was, but OKC was getting some calls. And it seems to me that even with that case, you know, obviously with the Celtics being at home court, you expect home cooking. It's kind of just become the expectation for most teams is, oh, if you're in your own building, you're going to get some calls. But I feel Celtics, like the Thunder are one of those teams that pull it.
Celtics shot 17. I noticed
Kyrie was holding his eye after that as well.
Celtics shot 17 and OKC had 34. That's crazy.
OKC's got three starters on 60% free throw shooting. Yeah. I mean, that's bad recipe anyway.
Well, I wonder if that was the strategy towards the end, though, because they were starting to foul Adams, Grant. Both teams were in the bonus for like the last, 5 minutes of the game, 4 minutes? They both got into foul trouble. And going back to what you were saying before, with, you know, this being one of the better defenses, two of the better defenses in the league, it seems like they kind of just left defense at home and they were just – teams were just going at each other, just brutal.
Kyrie was having his way down low.
Oh, yeah.
His off-the-ball movement was fantastic.
I felt like they just cleared the lane and they just kind of let him have his way. Just go right up, just cram the ball down their throat. I mean,
lefty shot.
That was gross. He had a couple of those plays where he just, man, what he does with a basketball is just obscene. He looked happy. I don't want to jinx it, but he looked happy after the game. Is this a story? Is Kyrie happy here? My column.
He had a half smile.
Haven't Boston had the most wins since like the end of November out of every team in the NBA?
I think they're 13. They're 13-4 in 2019 right now. I think the media is the reason why he's unhappy. Do we want to transition over into that AD stuff?
Listen, if Kyrie's happy and he's going to honor what he said at the start of the season, then we can start realistically looking at what available packages there are for AD. But me personally, until I know that Kyrie's re-signing, I'm not against standing pat until after the trade deadline and seeing what happens.
I think there's a small move that gets made because the way I look at it with the roster as currently constructed, we need another big or at least another player that can play somewhere between the 3 and 5 position. One trade that I've seen floated around a little bit, one that I see is realistic. Jonathan Isaac apparently is rumoredly available. I think it was Hardwood Houdini had one of those. It was like choose your own adventure and you could be Danny Ainge just like looking through all these trade options. And one of the ones they proposed was like T-Row and the Clippers pick for Jonathan Isaac. And I personally would be on board with that. I don't know how available he is with Orlando, but I know that Orlando is definitely looking for a point guard for their future, one that fits their young core, and another guy who can kind of add another layer to that offense there. Plus, they're running into a similar problem, I feel, that the 76ers had for a while, where they just kept drafting big men, and didn't really worry about roster construction. And now at this point, you've got Aaron Gordon, who's a player who is up and coming, great player, superstar level talent, in my opinion, who plays better at the four spot. But then you have Jonathan Isaac, who's kind of that stretch five modern NBA big man. And then you just went out and you got Mo Bamba. So, and apparently he was also available before that trade went down with Porzingis. They were talking about a Dennis Smith Jr. Mo Bamba swap.
So what if we did a T-Row Mo Bamba?
It would take more than T-Row, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would jump all over that, especially with the rumors coming out from Windhorse, who, granted, I think is a LeBron mouthpiece. But when it comes to stuff about the Celtics staying, he thinks that the Celtics are supposedly going to be trying to go out and get younger players that are coveted by the Pelicans in order to have a more tempting and tantalizing trade for Anthony Davis. So if they were truly looking into that situation, I think a swap of Terry Rozier for, you know, Terry Rozier in a first round pick for Isaac or whatever salary it takes to get Isaac or Bamba in house will be huge. Because either way, if you don't make a trade for Anthony Davis, going out and getting a guy that's on a rookie scale contract still, you have at least a few years of contract control when you're going to be getting into a contract crunch sooner rather than later, is not the worst idea in the world.
And are we believing the narrative that Davis is only going to come to Boston as a rental option?
No.
Absolutely not. And here's the thing with that too. This is a personal theory that I have just by what I've read and seen and heard. Everything going on with the whole LeBron situation in LA and Rich Paul being business partners with LeBron, as well as Mark Jackson also being a Clutch Sports Agency client. He's one who's like, oh yeah, the Pelicans should just take the offer from the Lakers. He's supposedly rumored to be in the running for the Lakers job if Walton gets canned. And then we had the whole talk about the locker room meltdown coming out of LA last night, including a bunch of veterans, Stevenson, Rondo, McGee, and Beasley getting all pissed about minutes and about all these rumors going around with the Lakers roster. Because pretty much at this point, anyone who's involved in that Anthony Davis talk is going to be on the table, minus LeBron. I think everyone is on the table. And because of that, you're going to have locker room dissent. But as it pertains to Anthony Davis's availability, his preference on where he wants to go, or his father coming out and making comments about the whole Isaiah thing, I think it's all noise. I think at the end of the day, New Orleans has no reason to move him now. Have none. There's nothing to gain. They're not going to be trying to make a run for the playoffs. Anthony Davis's best move is honestly just to sit out the rest of the season, and that's in the Pelicans' best interest as well. I don't think he is sold on being in LA. I think that's just being pushed by Rich Paul, and it's next level tampering at this point. You know, you've got guys who are clients of Clutch trying to make this happen, and hear me out. The whole Kyrie thing, oh, the rumors about, oh, Kyrie wants to go to LA to play with LeBron, or, oh, Kyrie's going to leave to go to the Knicks. When did all those rumors start? Think about it. Who has the most to gain from Kyrie leaving Boston? And when are these rumors coming out exactly? Right immediately after Kyrie reached out to LeBron. No, don't get me wrong. When Kyrie made that public knowledge, he kind of was inviting these rumors along.
Yeah.
But who do you think was pushing it? Who do you think Kyrie was talking to? Not only just the media, but he was talking to LeBron when he's talking about these fifth grade antics and this industry is fucked up. He's talking about what LeBron just did. LeBron hung him out to dry. He went to him, he talked to him about, you know, apologizing for how he's acting as a teammate when he was younger and, you know, appreciating the lessons he was trying to teach him when he was a young player in the league. And LeBron uses him as leverage to get AD to go to LA.
Yeah. My thing with all the Kyrie rumors is that I feel like if Kyrie was actually unhappy, it would have been its own story. Like you're saying, it all started from this phone call, and then the next thing was in all the AD talk that he's hesitant to go to Boston because him and his crew are not 100% that Kyrie's going to re-sign, and then everyone ran with that. I feel like if it was true, it would be its own individual story because that's a big deal and not just some side piece of Anthony Davis is unsure if that guy's going to re-sign.
It would be made known, especially towards the trade deadline. And don't get me wrong, I think Danny has a sit-down conversation with Kyrie and, you know, looks him in the eye and says, hey, are you staying here? We're going to do our best to put talent around you. We're going to try and make a play for Anthony Davis. We'll see what we can do about maybe trying to get a free agent if that doesn't pair over well, or maybe we try and do both. Is that enough to get you to stay? And I mean, if he truly thinks that Kyrie's not going to stay, then yeah, he'll look to shop him. But at this point, how much value is he going to have? It's a similar situation to like Paul George, where it's like, oh, well, you know, he's going to opt out. You know, he's going to want to go to a specific place. So unless you can get one of those trade partners on the phone, you're kind of in a tough spot. And it's similar to what's happening with Davis, where he has an actual other year on his contract. But because of that and the whole, I'm not going to re-sign here, X, Y, and Z, a lot of teams are going to be hesitant. That's just a classic NBA business tactic. This happens all the time. Now, do you make a risk like the Raptors or like the Thunder did and trade for a guy who supposedly, you know, isn't going to re-sign with you? I think with Kawhi, I think there's a really good chance he stays in Toronto. I think there's also a really good chance he goes to the Clippers. You know, there's so much movement in the NBA constantly at this point that nothing surprises me. One thing I will note too is the big rumor coming out with Anthony Davis was, oh, Los Angeles is his preferred destination. About an hour and a half after that news broke, there was a quote from Davis saying, myself nor my representation have given a deadline or a specific destination to the New Orleans Pelicans. And if that doesn't speak volumes, I don't know what does, because it's just all hearsay. And apparently Del Demps, GM of the Pelicans, was getting calls from LA, and he got the first offer, and he basically stopped taking calls from them because it was an offer of, what was it, Ball, Kuzma, Hart, Stevenson in a first round pick or something like that. Yeah. Some absolutely garbage trash offer. Pelicans have no incentive to deal him now, nor should they. No team has ever benefited from trading at the deadline like that. Think about it. Paul George was rumored to be going to Boston or to LA. That didn't happen until the summer. And the same thing with Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler was traded on draft night. And then the only time he got traded again was because of everything that was going on and him literally just making an ass out of himself and Minnesota simultaneously. And then with Kawhi too. Kawhi happened in the summer. It wasn't a deadline, you know, rumor. And he could have very well easily gotten dealt before the deadline last year because of him sitting out, you know, and rumors of him being a flight risk. So patience is the best thing for the Pelicans. And they're not stupid. They're not dumb. Especially if you're getting calls from freaking Greg Popovich saying, do not deal to the Lakers.
And I feel like a lot of the talk is like the Celtics are underperforming this year. And since that has all started, we very quietly have won 9 of our last 10. The one loss being that toe-to-toe game with Golden State. And in January, altogether, we're 11-4, 2-0 so far this month. We're playing our best basketball we have all year right now, and everything's coming together.
And dudes are getting healthy. Brown's looking amazing.
Yeah.
His last, I don't know what he got. What was his, do we know his final point total for today? Because in the past like 5 games, he's averaged almost 18 points per game. He's starting to play some of his best basketball. And you've got Hayward starting to look explosive. He had that really nasty alley-oop against the Knicks. They're starting to piece it together. You know, it took time, and we knew this was going to happen to a certain extent. I think at least the people who weren't like, yeah, banner 18 is going to happen immediately. Like, there's too many changes with the roster. There's guys trimming back their roles from what they were in the playoffs. There's a lot of adjustment time that I think a lot of people weren't accounting for. But now you're starting to see what this roster is looking like when everyone's fully healthy, they're playing their best basketball, and they're getting back to what they excel at.
Brown got 12, 2, and 2 in this game.
Yeah,
you know what,
4 of 6.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, and touching on the Gordon thing,
North corner freeze.
Yeah, and he has that really nice when he gets it on the block. He seems like he can take 2 dribbles and put his body into him and hits that fadeaway mid range that he just rises above, and it seems automatic for him at this point.
Yeah, you were saying on Gordon, Brennan?
I think that that's been one of Kyrie's big frustrations, I guess you could say, if you want to call it that, is that you expect Gordon to not be as slow as he is. Obviously, it's this terrible injury he's coming back from, but he just looks so hesitant, like it's so in his head. And no one looks as excited when Gordon does something good as Kyrie, because he was so excited. Even when he was in Cleveland, he was trying to recruit Gordon to come play. He really likes this guy and wants him to play at the level that we know he can. And obviously, it's just going to take a little bit of time, longer than we thought, probably. Maybe not, but it looks like it's going to be this whole year, even, until he's really back. And after that alley-oop, which was probably his most explosive play, Kyrie was so hyped. And I think just a lot of it is him waiting on Gordon a little bit.
Yeah, I said this in a chat with you, Dino, Tim, while the game was on. I said it just looks like he's a beat slow for everything.
Yeah.
And that's mainly confidence, I think, because he's shown he's got that touchback with his speed and his jump. But he just seems to be taking a bit of time to get that mental block out of the way. I'm hoping that come playoff time, with the atmosphere and when the pressure's really on, we start to see some real Gordon Hayward get play.
What? Oh, yeah. I think he's hesitant. You know, like,
yeah.
Play comes out and it's like, okay. I think the worst that bothers me is when he's, you know, he's on defense and all of a sudden he slacks off on defense. It's just like, oh, okay, this guy gets a three. And I see him so late to defense sometimes, and he has to overcome it. I think what it is, as you were saying, Adam, I think it's all in his head in terms of how he can push his body. He's trying to test these limits without going too far, and he can only do it in certain spurts, and he kind of picks his spots to be explosive. Today he had one where I was talking about earlier where he had this really nice pick, and he was going up for it, and he ended up getting, I think, like the ball got tipped from behind, and then someone finished the follow-through dunk. But
yeah, Morris got that dunk.
But that's the kind of plays that you need from him, and he's right on that cusp. He has to turn that final corner. And as Brandon was saying, it might just take till the playoffs. And you know what? Most teams, if you had Gordon Hayward and he's your second or third best player, you know, and you're waiting for him to get there, it would really hinder this team. But because of how much youth and talent we have, and we've got Smart having a career season, Mook Morris having a contract year, you're able to get by. And as soon as he's starting to piece together and you're seeing him play better, the team is just exponentially raised to a different level. And I can't wait to see that full potential unlocked, just because with everything that's happened with Gordon, and I know he's dealing with a lot of fans breathing down the back of his neck over it with this rehab and recovery, there's so much going into it. And he deserves success, and I want him to have that success. It's the same thing with Isaiah Thomas. You know, I want him to be successful. I want to see that guy return to form.
I think with Gordon, I'm still not on. Like, I still haven't lost faith that he's going to come back to the level he was at when we traded for him.
Yeah,
well, it was more of a signing for him. But either way, I still believe he's going to get there. George had like the end of a season and then a whole off season before he came back properly. Hayward, like you said this the other day, didn't you, Tim, when we were talking, that Hayward had surgery a few months before the start of the season again.
Yeah, and it hindered him.
Yeah, proper. And then you throw him back into like NBA level basketball. You're starting at the beginning of the season. Like, I don't know what that's going to do for your confidence when you're playing crap. But look, today he had He had 3 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds. If we can start getting like 10 points, 4 assists and 5 rebounds by the end of Feb, beginning of March consistently, then, you know, that's a building base for the guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, like you were saying, Tim, having all those other guys that are capable and able to play in his place could even slow down the recovery a little bit, because like we've been saying, I feel like a lot of it's mental, and it could take one breakout play for him to really just be done with it and dropping all the hesitation.
Yeah, I think it's going to take one of those performances. You know, he's had a couple really great games where he's just teed off. I mean, he teed off on the Wolves. What was the other team he ended up having a really great game
against? Both against the Wolves.
He had another game too where he was like piecing together a really, really solid game. I can't remember what team it was, but someone joked like, "Oh, finally, Gordon Hayward has a good game that's not against the Wolves." But you know, he's one of those players where he does a little bit of everything, kind of one of those all around solid pieces to have on a team. I think the best thing we can do now is give him more of a role off the bench, to where he's, you know, running point or point forward, distributing the ball. He's a really solid passer, and just have him focus on decision making and just overall processing plays, you know, at a faster rate. You know, he doesn't have to be the one taking the shots, but, you know, getting boards, making the smart pass, you know, helping set screens, and, you know, moving in transition. You know, one of the things that we'll put him on, and you saw it with that Knicks play, whereas, you know, he's getting back, running in transition, getting up the floor fast, and being there to make that smart offensive play.
And we see it every year when players turn it on after the All-Star game. Like, you have a couple of players every year that have played poor through the first half of the season. We get through All-Star weekend, and then all of a sudden the switch clicks.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that could be the case with Gordon as well. We get through the All-Star weekend, and then he's had a bit more time to rest. You know, the NBA, you're playing every other day, you're flying. Once he's had that, like, week or so to just recuperate, put in some gym work, maybe that's when we start to see the switch click.
Yeah, I think that'll be, you know, one of those times where it'll be interesting to see how the Celtics come out of that break, because there's a couple players who have got something to gain, and we'll see what happens, you know, with the deadline coming up, if there's any moves, if there's any rumors. There's a reason why we haven't heard any proposed trades coming out of Boston. Ainge, you know, besides these, you know, trade offers, well, you know, they're going to have to include Brown and Tatum to make this trade for Anthony Davis. We haven't heard any legitimate offers out of Boston because, one, Boston seems committed to keep Kyrie, and they can't get involved in any trade talks now without moving Kyrie. It's good to not hear those names come up, but it will be interesting if we get closer to that deadline. If you hear something about any of these free agents being moved or any kind of consolidation trade when it comes to expiring contracts and picks.
Yeah, my only thing with that is that I wasn't sure on who we would trade, but you mentioned Terry. That would be the one I'm okay with moving there. But I think that it would be more likely that we're looking at guys on the buyout market. Like, even someone like DeAndre Jordan is rumored to be there, and that would be an amazing Baynes-type player who, by the way, is now going to be out until the All-Star break, and we seem to really struggle, especially with rim protection when he's out. But at least it's only 5 games till then. But I think we could make some noise on the buyout market.
Yeah, plus you got to figure out what you're doing with the Bird contract. And that's another reason why I think a consolidation trade, if you can deal him to a team with cap space who can waive Bird, because right now Jabari Bird was brought in the other day, facing more charges, witness tampering, and other issues.
Oh, man.
So we'll see what happens with it, man. You know, I think they have to get rid of him because that contract right now, the way it's adding up on their roster, if they waive him, they're eating that money. Yeah. And that affects their luxury tax. That puts them in the repeater tax for next summer if they have, you know, if they're over the luxury tax line. So they have to consider that because that's a long-term effector of where they want to be. Because obviously they're willing to pay that luxury tax, but if you've got a guy who's caught up in a legal trial right now, get his ass out of town.
Yeah,
it's not worth it. It sucks because I had high hopes for him, but you know he did a really terrible thing, and I hope the woman is okay. But man, like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Throwing everything away.
Yep. And hurting someone else in the process, more importantly, obviously, yeah. You know, people's lives comes first, but you can't help from a Celtics fan perspective being really disappointed, especially when everyone was like, so Team Jabari last year. It's just an upsetting story to hear, and I hope he gets the help he needs, and I hope the victim is okay and recovering. But moving on from that, obviously, we've kind of covered all the Celtics topics for today. And since it is Super Bowl Sunday, we would like to do a little bit of a prediction game, I guess, when it comes to the big game that's happening in T-minus an hour and 30 minutes. Before we transition to that football talk, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor for the podcast today. That is Thrive Fantasy. They are amazing props, betting, fantasy game and app. They're excellent. We've got a bunch of apps running with this promotion. Use it. It's amazing. A lot of fun. Game changer when it comes to fantasy sports. Check it out, y'all.
Hey, everyone. This is Adam Weinstein, the founder and CEO of Thrive Fantasy. For everybody who doesn't know, we're a new daily fantasy sports platform for PropBet. So definitely would love for you guys to check it out. We actually have $10,000 guaranteed prize pool for NFL Super Bowl on Sunday. So we definitely have a lot of value and opportunity for you to make some money. Check out our deposit bonuses and matches. And we'd love to see you on our app.
And let's transition into football. So you guys, what are you thinking about the game tonight? Obviously, a lot of hype going into it. Rematch of that first Patriots Super Bowl win.
Well, I want to just plug something else just before we get into this. During the week, we're going to be releasing our first Patriots Pulse podcast. Tim, your boy Tim's going to be the main host of that one. So make sure to find out on iTunes and Spotify so you can listen to the recap. Now back to predicting tonight's results.
All I hope, as a Niner fan, I know I shouldn't be a Niner fan. I got to act like a Patriots fan right now. It's always fuck LA. So as long as the Patriots come out on top, obviously, I don't see it being all that close. I think it's high scoring, but I think the Patriots have potential to pretty comfortably take this one.
That scares me a little. You're not the only one who said it. So I've heard a lot of media sources talking about it and saying, you know, this could be one of the more comfortable wins for the Patriots in terms of Super Bowls. Especially when you look at the Rams defense, I believe they're ranked 30th in rushing defense. Yeah. Their main move is to get after the quarterback, and you've got guys like Aaron Donald, who's now, congrats to him, by the way, for Defensive Player of the Year. Absolute stud there. You've got Sue, who is obviously, I personally think, is a very dirty player, but is a scary player to go against on defense because he's just an absolute monster of a defensive tackle. And you've got really solid corners, former Patriots corner, Keep Talib, and you've got Marcus Peters, former Chief, out there. So, I mean, you're looking at a lot there, and there's a lot of talent to go around that team, but I just don't think they stack up in the same way the Patriots do.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Brady has even gotten sacked in the other games of this postseason yet.
No, he actually, they dropped a stat on the radio. He hasn't gotten sacked by a defensive tackle since week one. He got sacked twice in that game, and he hasn't been sacked by a defensive tackle since then.
That is crazy. So, I don't keep up with football amazingly. Educate me, besides the big names, who are some guys to keep an eye on here?
CJ Anderson, because he's going to be kind of taking over the role of Gurley. From what I've read, Gurley's knee has been an issue. He actually played really, really great against the Cowboys, but he's kind of been hampered by this injury, and that actually kept him out for most of the game against the Saints. CJ Anderson, obviously former Bronco, has punished the Patriots in the past, so that's definitely a name to watch out for. I do think the Patriots are focused on stopping the run. Mainly, if you look at their actives and inactives for today, Danny Shelton is active, who is a guy they acquired from the Cleveland Browns, predominantly for stopping the run. So it will be interesting to see how they deal with that. Brandon Cooks, former Patriot and former Saints player, absolute stud of a wide receiver. I am interested to see how he handles this game going against the Pats, and it's, you know, his second Super Bowl appearance in, you know, especially since he got knocked out in the last one. I'm wondering if he's going to be hesitant and shying away from contact. That's obviously just an opinion of mine, but I feel like he's probably going to be a little bit skittish. On top of that, Patriots running back core, you've got Sony Michel. Obviously, he's having an amazing season right now, especially for a rookie. In terms of the postseason, he's putting up some absurd stats, so that will be something to watch. Obviously, Tom Brady, that's a given. And I think interesting to see will be how Goff handles the Patriots' pressure. I think what they're going to end up doing is controlling the clock a lot, especially towards the beginning of the game. Patriots are going to want to run the ball. When they end up scoring first and eating up about half of a first quarter, and then they get a stop, and they manage to march up the field and get another score, that's exactly what they did with the Chiefs. It's what they really, really did successfully against the Chargers. And if you're running the ball, eating up a bunch of clock time, and you end up getting scores on your, you know, first two offensive drives, and you manage to either hold the team scoreless against you or hold them to a field goal, you're putting the immediate pressure on them, and I just don't know if the Rams are going to be able to throw it that much success.
So what does your prediction look like? And assuming you have the Pats taking it, is it Brady MVP?
I think that's a premature one. I won't make any predictions on that. I mean, oftentimes it has been Brady when it's coming into the Super Bowls and when they win. I could see a Sony Michel. Could see a Sony Michel Super Bowl MVP if they end up winning this. My final score, most of my predictions of what I've done, it's going to be high scoring. Taking the over of 57.5, I'm looking at a grand total of, I believe, 61. My scoring prediction was 33-27 or 34-27 is what I've been saying. Patriots by 7.
Oh, man. Yeah, definitely high scoring. That would be exciting to watch. Works for me.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got two potent offenses that focus a lot on moving the ball. Both teams, I believe, were in the top 5 for passing offenses. It will be interesting to see how the Rams handle the run game in this, especially since you're going to be depending on CJ Anderson a lot, with Gurley kind of hampered with that knee issue, as I said before. I think they will get Gurley involved a little bit, but they'll probably end up splitting the carries between the two. And I don't know how much that affects the Patriots' plans on defense. I think forcing Goff to throw the ball, I think it's really going to be the thing that decides it, especially with the Patriots' secondary being as strong as it is. Well, other than that, do you guys have any predictions on scores or anything like that?
I got a prediction that the Patriots win.
There you go.
That's good.
That's what I'm going with, too.
I like that. Axe to grind with LA, I think, but I think it's Pats. I think Pats pull it off, but...
There'll be a recap pod on this on Patriots Pulse.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big thing. Hopefully, we'll have something good to celebrate and talk about. It's obviously not fun to do a pod about a loss, so knock on wood right now. Hopefully, we'll have something good to talk about. And looking forward to the offseason, potentially what we're looking at with Gronk. Might be Rob Gronkowski's last game for all we know, especially with the injury reports coming out about him suffering from Achilles tendonitis for most of the season, as well as another bulging disc in his back. So appreciate him while you got him. And all right, other than that, I think that makes it a wrap for today. Thank you guys for listening to the Celtics Pulse Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Please give us a follow on Twitter, Celtics_Pulse, and also Pulse Podcast Network. Download our app. It's totally free. All the pods we offer, awesome. So check it out, guys. Thank you again for listening today.
And go buy some merch.
Please.